and step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cups. Here's to this moment, it will never happen again.
This is Offstage and On the Air, performance number 679. I am Lisa Sheps. I am joined by my wonderful co-host, Miss Nicole Shiro.
Hello, Lisa.
And our apprentice, Lulu. Say hello, Lulu.
Hello, Lulu.
You're listening to us on KOOP HD1 HD3 Hornsby, streaming live at koop.org. Don't go away.
Step right up. The show's about to begin. Troubles and raise your cup. Step right up, feast your eyes on the wonders of this world. Oh yeah.
Young people gotta dance,
It is Wednesday, July 29th, 2022. On the show today, we have the Austin Playhouse and their show, previews of departing attractions in their new transitory theater space. And of course, Nicole and I will have lively discussions of the world of theater in New York, Chicago, Austin, Lampasas, and Atlanta. Don't go away.
Only three more weeks in the chair.
Young people gotta dance.
Young people gotta dance, Nicole.
I haven't heard music from that show in a long time.
That's not true. You heard it last week.
That same song?
Not that song. You heard it. You said from that show.
You really played something from this show last week.
The Most Happy Fellow. We played. Big D, Mile. Yes, gonna be Big D, Little A, Double L A, Big D, Little L, Double Yes.
Well, then you are correct. I was incorrect.
Yeah. Well,
I was wrong. I really haven't. There's a lot of good songs from that.
Yeah. Well, so
Why did you play that?
Well, I'm gonna just belay that question for a moment. I want to introduce the folks.
All right,
here.
Let's do that.
We are fortunate enough to have I don't want to say you're a new volunteer at Co-op. You were a volunteer of Co-op, and then the pandemic happened, and you've come back. Lulu, welcome to Offstage and On the Air.
Thank you.
Tell us what you were doing here at the radio station prior to the COVID-19. Who were you working with?
Oh, Jay. I was on The Lounge Show.
Lounge Show. We love that.
Good show.
And I was with him for quite a few weeks, and then COVID happened, and then I forgot everything I learned.
There you go. And now you're back to learning.
Yes.
I love it.
That is great. And we were speaking before we went on the air. You are a special ed teacher.
Yes, I am.
Mazel tov.
Yes, most excellent. Yes.
Thank you for your service.
Yes.
Last year was definitely a very tough year.
Yeah. Well,
and more so than the usual.
Yes. Unusual. That's a good way to describe it.
Absolutely. And who else we have here in the studio audience is our dear friend Lowell Bartholomew.
Hello.
Hi, Lowell. How are you?
I'm good.
And Laura Toner Haddock will be joining us in just a little while. I want to thank two people. I want to thank, first of all, Mr.
Kim Simpson
for another wonderful International Folk Bazaar. He always does such a great job.
It's internationally and folky.
And it was brought to me in my discussions with Lulu that I've been very remiss in talking about our theme song, which we've been playing now for probably 4 or 5 years, and the generosity of the human condition and Dean Johansson, who gave us permission to use that song. It's called Step On Up. It's by the Human Condition, and they've got a great lineup of music.
They do. Have you been friends with them for a long time? Or how did you meet isn't there a story behind the human
I don't know that there's a story. I forgot what show I was doing. I was engineering on an interview show. It might have been with Abigail I forgot the name of it. But they were a guest and they played this song. And I said, that would make for a good theme song. And I said, can I use it? Please, sir, may I have some more?
You got all of it out.
Anyway, so thank you very much. Dean Johansson, the name of the group is Human Condition, and that song is Step On Up. Step On Up.
Step On Up.
Step In Time. So, boy, I am totally unprepared for everything.
I don't think you're unprepared for everything. Today's just a crazy frenetic.
I am, because I didn't turn on my computer, which has all of my notes on it.
Oh, because you're treeless. So you
because
have
I'm treeless.
Yes.
I'm considering going back to be tree-full because of this very thing. It's you get really sort of stuck on the use of the computer. But I want to start off by saying why I was playing the most happy fella again.
The most happy fella. Apparently, we've played it 2 weeks in a row.
Well, I did it before because it was going to open. It was the new Daniel Fish version of it. Daniel Fish, of course, is the guy that did what we like to call Dirty Oklahoma.
Yes.
That brought those folks that were not Oklahoma fans to become fans of Oklahoma.
Yeah, I don't know.
Well, I didn't see it, so I can't say.
No, me neither. But, I mean, Hugh Jackman didn't do it for me, so I don't know.
Well, there you go. If Hugh Jackman can't do it for you, then nobody can. So this was not the most happy fella that opened at the Williamstown Theater Festival.
No?
No, it's called The Most Happy in Concert.
Oh,
because,
okay.
And let me read the first two paragraphs.
There's still happy going on. That's okay.
That's true. This is the second two paragraphs by the review from Laura Collins Hughes of the New York Times. Quote, and it starts with a quote. was there supposed to be a story involved in that? A woman asked her companions on a patio outside 62 Center for Theater and Dance at Williams College. No, ma'am, evidently there was not. Or if there was, it isn't the story that Frank Lesser tells in his 1956 musical, The Most Happy Fella, about the romance between an unhandsome middle-aged Tony and the waitress Rosabella. To be fair, no one promised that it would be, and this is not the musical, but rather a 70-minute program of songs and song fragments from the score. And it may leave you, as it left me, humming those tunes for days. This, though, is no friendly pattering cabaret. So,
oh, okay. I love everything about this.
I know. So far, I want to see it.
Yes.
So it, you know, the Most Happy Fella is a huge. Lowell, do you know the Most Happy Fella?
I don't.
I don't really either, to be quite honest. I know the music from it, and Lulu, I'm guessing you don't, because she admitted to me that she's not much of a theater person, and she despises musicals.
Oh, I did not say despise.
I know. I like to embellish.
I just do not indulge.
It's not your jam. That's okay.
Yeah, I do not indulge in that.
So this Most Happy Fellow has a huge cast. It's got like some 40 people in that
cast. I was about to say,
cast.
It's one of those very large casts with a large orchestra.
And the Most Happy in Concert, who, as Maya, Laura Collins Hughes says, is fella free. It's all women. It's all women of, I was about to say it's all women of color, but that is not true. It's all women and seven women that are singing the songs, not in order either.
You see, I love everything kind of about this. This is spectacular.
Okay. Among the cast is Mary Testa and Mallory Portnoy, who are both in Oklahoma.
I mean, the radio listeners can't see, but I'm already like, oh, okay. Nodding like, okay. Yeah.
And the other thing that happens with this is says that one song bleeds into another and it doesn't even leave time for anybody to applaud, which I think is kind of weird, too. The reviews were not necessarily
going to be moving it along
all that great. Other people in the show are Tina Fabricae, April Mathias, Aaron Markey, Maya Langerstam, and Keanna Williams. Mm-hmm. And we're going to hear, we're not going to hear Fabricae sing. We're going to hear the song that Fabricae sings, which is called Young People, a little bit later when we go off. I'm just going to take a moment to stop talking about the Happy Fella in Concert to say hello to Laura Haddock. How are you doing? Well, hi, Laura.
Hello, Lisa. Hello, Nicole.
Hello, Laura.
We're talking about the Most Happy Fella in Concert at Williamstown Theater Festival right now.
Love talking about Most Happy Fella.
Me too.
Does it make you happy?
The most.
So, the set, he says, I don't know, this does not make me want to go see this show. I'm just going to say
the same show?
I don't think I would want to see it, but it doesn't matter. It closes on Sunday, and it's in Williamstown, so we're not going to get there.
Yes, if I could magically get it for you, I would.
So that's the Most Happy Fella. Laura, have you seen the show before, or do you know it at all?
Not at all.
Me either. I mean, you'll know some music. You know, standing on the corner, watching all the girls go by.
I don't know. Could you keep singing that for a little?
This is like, she's already sang two or three today from there.
You don't want to.
She's on a roll.
You don't want to do it.
I know that song. Being the person who doesn't know much about, I know that song.
Well, it's a popular song. It was part of, you know, oftentimes in the once upon a time, the pop songs, the standards are all musicals. Mm-hmm. So there.
You probably know more musical songs than you think.
I have this to admit to everybody here.
Admit it now.
I don't know that I have admitted it, but I remember the first time I saw. My Fair Lady, and they came to Goodnight, My Someone. I said, I didn't know the Beatles wrote a song that's in a musical.
Yeah.
So there you go. That shows you how smart I am. We did have an opening on Broadway of The Kite Runner. Did anybody read the book or see the movie?
Book.
You read the book?
Mm-hmm.
Did you love it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, people loved it. Evidently, play not so much.
I was about to say, play not so much from what they say.
Oh, look at this. So since the time that I first saw Did They Like It, which is a critic's review aggregator, at that time it had like four thumbs down and only one thumbs up, and now there are two thumbs up.
Oh, there's movement on there.
Four thumbs down and five in the middle. So the reviews were not so good. It was reviewed by Maya Phillips for The Times, and she says, quote, unsurprisingly, the most memorable image in The Kite Runner, which opened at the Helen Hayes Theater on Thursday night, is of the kites. They're miniature, attached to thin poles that several actors wave, tissue paper flitting bird-like over their heads. The paper crinkles as the kites part the air with a soft swish. If only the rest of this stiff production, adapted by Matthew Spengler from the Padua 2003 novel by Khalid Husseini, exuded such elegance.
Yeah, I read that. I was like, that's
not
mean.
Nice.
Not so well. It's not mean. It's just not. She did not like it. Yeah. So the story is of two friends, Amir and oh my god, I just lost the and Hassan. I can't remember the name of the other character's name.
Not one I can help you out.
But they become friends, and Amir makes some they call cowardly decisions in their friendship, and it spans a lot of times. Amir is played by Amir Aronson, and I have to, and it's directed by Giles Croft. And oh my God, what's his name? The actor, he's reciting his opening lines with the stiffness of a child delivering a book report and never totally eases into the role.
Yeah.
It's a good description, though.
It's a lot of ouchies. Yes.
So it's really upsetting, but it's pictures look beautiful.
Well,
I think
they did say the kite was pretty awesome.
They did, the person that Hassan is indeed the other character's name. And only the person that plays Hassan has got to span decades in terms of playing a young person and an older person, and doesn't necessarily do it all that well. Mm. And what is sort of cool is that a lot of this, or some of it, chunks of it, are spoken in Farsi.
Hmm.
Yeah. And they had a cultural advisor and script consultant, Humaira Gilzai, I'm sure I'm mispronouncing that, and then a tabla player who plays through the whole thing, Salar Nadar, with music written by Jonathan Greeling. So,
interesting.
The Kite Runner. There you go.
Stiff.
That's that.
Stiff.
I got some other reviews. Broadway News, Brittany Samuel says, rather than show us most of these events in action, playwright Matthew Spengler uses Amir as a narrator, relaying the occurrences from downstage. If there's a great performance, it belongs to Salir Nadir, the tabla percussionist, underscoring the play's actions. And, you know, they always say, and it'd be interesting to see what other people feel about this, and the use of a narrator in playwriting, a lot of people look at it as a crutch and not a great way of it's a way to get things across that you, it's telling them as opposed to showing them. Anybody have any feelings about that?
I don't mind it in general, or I don't have a rule against it. Mm-hmm. I think Indecent, for example, has such a great narrator character.
That's true, but that narrator is also really part of it.
And I think if they use it to, you know, as a window for the audience,
it's like Sideman is another one like
a
that
way for us to connect. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Then I think it can work really well. Yeah. I do think it sometimes gets used as
sometimes
playwriting
it's
shorthand.
A hot too. Mess.
That's,
of,
that,
yeah.
that's the problem.
Yeah.
It's like voiceover movies. Like they tell you, like, oh, exactly. If you have to use voiceover in a movie, then you've lost it. And it's like, well, that's not true because there's some great, you know, with Sunset Boulevard without voiceover by a dead guy. Spoiler alert. You'll find out.
Thanks a lot, Lowell.
But there's ways to do both things that are integral.
And it's
and
definitely for people who don't know what's going on a little bit and they've lost the plot and it helps them, yeah. perhaps, you know.
That's
agreed.
True.
Yeah. And it just shows that there are things that prove the rule by not having them. So that's it for the openings. We also have a leadership change at the Goodman Theater in Chicago, Illinois. The Goodman Theater's been run for the past 35 years by Robert Falls, and now it's going to be taken over by Susan V. Booth, who's been over at the Alliance in Atlanta and has done some amazing work.
Yes.
And she will be the first woman to lead the Goodman. And that's it. So the Goodman has an annual budget of around $22 million.
I
that
know,
would be nice.
That bananas?
Wow.
That would be nice. And just as the Alliance... His budget is $20 million, so you know, right around the same thing. And during Robert Falls' tenure at the Goodman, he did 150 world or American premieres. I thought there was more information than that. I don't know how much has transferred from the Goodman to commercial theater to Broadway. Nothing jumps to mind, but I can't imagine it hasn't happened. Both the Goodman and the Alliance has won a Tony for the.
I was about to say they're Tony.
Yeah, but
Lort,
you know
they're Tony winners.
I have to say I'm a little. The thing about the Lort Tony is it really just it makes the tour. I don't know that there's a Lort company that hasn't won it yet. Sure, there is, but it seems like it just. Goes from Lort company to Lort company.
But that company's gotta feel bad at this
Pardon
point.
Me?
If that one company has not won it, they've gotta true. Really start getting a complex.
Yeah.
I feel like there is one that hasn't. I feel like I went down this rabbit hole trying to figure it out.
I'm sure there is.
Well, I can actually say there is because there's a brand new Lort Theater that just joined in
That's
the
true.
Last few months.
Yeah, so that
the
one
Gulf
didn't.
Shores Playhouse, so they obviously don't have one yet. But I think there is another.
True that. So Susan Booth graduated from Northwestern, so she's really coming back home. She was also the Goodman's director of new play development from 93 to 2001.
But says she had a connection there.
Yep, and just a little, you know, fun fact: her husband proposed to her in the catwalks of the Goodman.
Aww,
isn't that cute?
Full circle.
Just want to be careful when you get down on one knee up above the grid. Just
Maybe
saying.
They were hanging. Maybe they were in harness. There could be more to that story,
yeah,
Lisa Sheps.
That's true. So one of the things that the Goodman does is it presents classics in a new way. And then also produces new works. And she said, quote, "I love me a classic."
Who doesn't?
"I love me a classic, and I have no interest in regulating that work to other theaters. But I love the level playing field that's created when you produce new work." And she was at the Alliance for 21 years. And they brought us a whole bunch of the shows to Broadway. They had 85 new premieres, and they brought 6 musicals to Broadway, including The Prom and The Color Purple.
I was going to say The Color Purple. Yeah, that's their jam. They like to do all that.
So the 2022 season over at the Goodman, which was done by Falls, not Booth, is a world premiere of Rebecca Gilman's play Swing State, which is about a Wisconsin community split by political polarization. That couldn't be happening.
In Wisconsin?
And Christina Anderson's The Ripple, The Wave That Carried Me Home, about a family fighting for integration of a swimming pool in Kansas in the 60s. There's also going to be a 30th anniversary of The Who's Tommy, directed by Des McAnuff.
Wow. Okay.
Des Mac Enough, which is better than Des Mac Not Enough.
Okay. You say you should take this show on the road.
Yep. Let's check. Let's do a quick time check. So there was some other stuff that we wanted to talk about before we get into the really fun interviewee part of the show. And I have to remember there's one specifically that something. Well, I will just say this. There's going to be a Frida Kahlo musical. Mm. Who loves Frida Kahlo?
I do. Anybody? I find her fascinating, but I'm unsure of the musical so far. I haven't seen enough to make an opinion on it.
Well, the music is by a Mexican composer named Jaime Lozano, and lyrics are by Obie-winning playwright Nina Bieber, and it's going to happen in 2003. But I think what piqued my interest a lot was this picture, which was in the article. Hold on, I'm having trouble turning my computer around.
It's like a little alligator.
And it's got, I just forgot her husband's name. Diego Rivera in the middle of her unibrow. I just liked it.
That drew you in?
It tickled my fancy.
She's fascinating. There's a lot of things you could do, but what will you do? Do you know what I mean?
Exactly. Well, we'll see what it looks like. I'm going to guess they're going to focus a lot on the love story. That would be my guess.
Probably. I mean, when I heard they were making an Imelda Marcos musical about Imelda Marcos, I was like, what? And then you get Here Lies Love, and I'm like, what?
Oh my God.
And like, this could happen. Yeah. I won't discount it.
I'm glad. You know what? Because they're going to do it anyway, whether you discount it or not.
I know that.
Oh my God, I just lost the one. Steppenwolf. There it is. This one just makes me laugh. I just like the title of this show. This is going to be done at the Steppenwolf. It is...
also in Chicago.
Also in Chicago. Mm-hmm. The other major theater there. Mm-hmm. James L. James, who wrote the Pulitzer Prize winning Fat Ham, which I want to do here in Austin. I bet you want to do it, too. That seems like it's Austin Playhouse up their alley, too. We'll fight over it. Anyway, listen to this title. I just love it. The Most Spectacularly Lamentable Trial of Ms. Martha Washington.
Love it.
Cool. I'm in. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Love it.
It's being directed by Whitney White. And let me say, and it's going to be starring people like... Cindy Gold, Sidney Charles, Carl Clemens Hopkins, Nikki Crawford, Victor Munson, Donovan Sessions. Vicki Crawford is already in Fat Ham as well. And this is part of the 47th season. I'm trying to find... this follows the recently widowed... The recent...
We widowed.
Marriage!
I was just about to say, you're going to get marriage in there?
The recently widowed mother of America, who lies alone in her Mount Vernon bed, ravaged by illness and attended by the very same enslaved people who will be free the moment she dies.
Yeah.
Sounds interesting.
It does indeed.
I will say two more things before we take a break. And one is that Fiddler on the Roof in Yiddish is coming back.
It's returning. Yes. It's very exciting.
And that's the Yiddish Theater of Volksbang. And it is playing off Broadway at the Signature Center, I believe.
I think you are correct on that.
I, of course, did not... put it in my computer, so I'm just going on there. But it's they have not announced the casting yet, but that is happening. Finally, Into the Woods has extended.
Shocker.
Well, it was shocker in that the theater was going to be given to
the piano lesson.
The piano lesson. And now there's a big swap between a Jujamson Theater and a Schubert Theater, which doesn't happen very often because now the piano lesson is going into the Barrymore, I believe.
They're going into another theater, and it's been a whole problem. They announced that we knew they were going to do this like 2 weeks ago. They were waiting because the set was already built for the other theater. Mm. So it was now a fact of, can we take this, refigure it, put it in a smaller house, and do that all? And so the Into the Woods people said, yes, you can.
Yes, you can.
And Into the Woods went the piano lesson down the block.
We've got tickets to that. I'm going to hope they let us know.
Into the Woods or piano lesson?
Piano lesson.
It's going to open at the same place.
Yeah.
Oh, the other one.
Not in the same theater, but at the same time.
Same time, but it's moving theaters. It's
your tickets will be transferred to an equivalent seat.
Well, no, I figured. But
A more intimate house.
So if you go to offstageonod.com, there is a whole article about the piano lesson, which is really interesting, that talks about that. Of course, they're spinning it this way, is that's the theater they always wanted to be in.
Sure.
And
of course
it is,
they are.
This is part of Wilson's Americana cycle. And this is the first woman to direct on Broadway.
Yes.
Wow. That's amazing. Anyway, Into the Woods is going on. They haven't announced casting for the
rest of the extension.
For the extension, whether it will remain the same or whether other people will be there. So we're going to take a break. We're going to listen to I Know Things Now, which my co-host Nicole Shiro sang when she did that show, because it is sung by Little Red.
She came and saw me. That's how come she knows that.
I love it. She did a great job. Here it is. We'll be right back.
And he showed me things many beautiful.
We are back. You're listening to Offstage and on the Air with Lisa and
Nicole.
Cool. That was a very vibrant discussion. We should say that during the break, we lost Lulu. She's gone.
Lulu, we looked, said toodles.
One moment she was there, the next moment she was gone.
We do that.
But
to
she
people.
Seemed to come step right into the action, and she was not, you know, when I told her that I was going to put her on mic, she seemed a little off put, but she seemed very comfortable.
Yes, she was not afraid.
Not afraid.
Get right in there. Best way to do it.
Not afraid. Well, let's get to what we were talking about. I'm so excited to reintroduce the guest here, Laura Haddock, who is the managing artistic director over at Austin Playhouse. And, a good friend. I'm going to just say that right out loud.
I love it.
And Lil Bartholomew, also a good friend, who's just amazes me at every step of the way, the amount of things that he does. But in this case, he is wearing many hats. But I guess primarily in this case,
hats.
You are the director and playwright of the show that's happening, which is called Previews of the Departing Attractions at Austin Playhouse's new temporary transitionary home. Mm-hmm. So I want to talk about both things if we can. So let's just talk for a moment about this new home that you're going in. I'm very excited about this, and seeing the pictures and reading the blog and all that, it's making me very excited for you.
Well, we are really delighted to be here. We are taking over the second and third floors of the education building on University Baptist Church's West Campus location. So we're going to be at the corner of 22nd and San Antonio.
So awesome.
Right in the heart of that.
Yep.
And this is a great building that was built in 1949 as a student union, and that third floor had an auditorium built into it. And it's been used by, I think, college church groups most recently over the years. And UBC really wanted more community engagement in the space, and they wanted it to return to its original purpose as a theater. And two of our longtime company members, Hans Venable and David Stahl, are longtime they're with UBC. Very
congregants.
Thank you.
You're quite
running
welcome.
Through.
It goes through years of clergy training.
So glad. So they connected us, and everyone at UBC has really been fantastic helping move us into this space. It is an older building, so there are some challenges there. But that's Natalie George is there with her team.
That's what Lowell was telling me before he went on.
Lighting in the place.
The lovely Natalie George of Natalie George Productions.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so besides the theater, what other spaces, because you said two floors.
Absolutely. So it so happened we were only going to have the third floor, and then in mid-May, the sorority who had been renting the second floor decided that they were going to move out of the space, and so we have now a large studio rehearsal space, green room, dressing rooms, more offices. And we will be the space will be available to other organizations as well. It's not
that's
just
great.
For
I'm just so curious. Excellent. Not that it matters. I'm just curious. Is it set up in such a way that the dressing rooms lead pretty directly to the backstage area?
So this is what's so great. I'm so glad you asked. Originally, it was going to be really awkward to figure out dressing rooms, and we had a kind of extra room on that top floor. But having this second floor space, there's a back hallway and back staircase that leads directly
right
there. And of course, there are elevators in the building as well.
You do take, they took us on a tour of that finally last night, which was great. I mean, it's really this part is even more impressive, almost as impressive as the space, because it's like, wow, like totally room for a dressing room and another dressing room, and the rehearsal space is great, and there's like a kitchen. but that back hallway takes a couple twists and turns, so I predict there might be like a Spinal Tap moment.
Oh, God, would not that be wonderful?
If like Zach Carr is like, if you hear him yelling, rock and roll, then, you know, he's wandering, he's making the circle, so...
The building has personality, but...
That's amazing. I have to say, when you first told me about this building a few weeks ago, I initially cringed because it's on the drag, and that scares me just from the point of view of parking and stuff like that. But after thinking about it and reading, especially on the stuff from your site, talking about, you know, free street parking after 6 o'clock on the weekends, and then two parking structures right next door. It seems just amazing and wonderful. It's just going to be a great addition to that area of the city.
I think so. And I understand people being curious about how parking is going to work, but there is street parking in the evening. We are looking to shift our production schedule to take advantage of the times where there aren't as many students on campus, so we'll probably be a little more active in the summer than we used to be. Mm-hmm. But there are these two large parking garages right across the street. So I think for most folks, if they choose to use those, they'll have a shorter walk than they did at ACC Highland Space.
Yeah, yeah. which I used to get in my steps coming to your shows over there. So that is good. And then the other thing is, you know, typically when I want to avoid the drag area is daytime during the school year, and you're gonna, like as you said, capitalize on the time, but also your evenings, and then that's much better on any day of the year.
Right, and we're not gonna do, at least this first year, until we really know the space, we're not going to schedule opposite a UT football game.
I think
no,
yeah. Gee, that's smart.
We know our place in that ecosystem. Yes.
or whatever parties are going on at Dobie Hall.
Yes.
Well, that's amazing. I'm thrilled for you, and I was thrilled to learn about the second floor with all the rehearsal space. I'm gonna just put you on the spot. Are those rehearsal spaces and things like that going to be opened up to the Greater Austin Theater community?
Absolutely. There will be rentals. We are renting this facility and paying for it, but we are very committed to making this space as useful to as many other organizations as possible.
Well, that is amazing.
Hashtag excellent.
I'm very happy for you, and I think that that's going to be a great addition. And it's great that Austin Playhouse, you know, we need more venues. It's getting harder and harder to keep a venue going, and then, you know, we need to, as we lose, we need to gain. So
yes.
you have lost and gained all at the same time.
Mm-hmm. And we did a little tally the other day, and this is going to be our 19th venue we've been in Austin.
Oh,
we've
my.
Produced
wow.
in. I mean, some of them were there were only.
Are you
one
going back
show
to Live
there.
Oak as
mm-hmm.
well?
Okay. We are. We're doing the full history, but and so we're going to have that up in the lobby too for
and
folks.
And I am sure that I've told that this on the show. I'm pretty sure I've told you, but I moved to Austin a little over 20 years ago, and I was driving around in my little neighborhood, and I was like digging through the Penn Field area, and then I ran across Austin Playhouse. I went, oh my God, Austin has a theater, and it's like the very first theater I saw in Austin, Texas.
Wow.
Was that. And I see that picture.
You still have that visual moment of time and space, one of those pictures in your head.
Yeah, it was big for me. It was really good.
Well, I love that. And I loved that space. It was a fun.
Yeah. Yeah. I never saw it backstage, but certainly as someone in the audience, I loved it a lot.
Indeed.
Well, let's get over to this inaugural production, which is Previews of Departing Attractions. I have to say, Lowell Bartholomew, I met you when you came into our theater and doing video projections. Mm-hmm. And so I said, oh, here's a video designer. And then the next time
learned.
I saw you, I thought you were doing, you did audio design. I went, oh, Lowell also does audio. And then you were an actor, and then you were a writer. And then, so you, I more than anybody else, I think in this town where, and you do it well. I mean, it's not, you are a jack of all trades, master of all trades.
Mm-hmm.
You do so many things in theater. And writing is, I guess, a relatively new piece to your canon. Well, as I read it, as I read your blog today, and talking about how you came up to that and felt like it seemed like it was more on the other side of all the other things you were doing than this.
A little bit.
That's why I use the word relatively.
Yeah. I was writing before Austin, but I was writing before I thought there was a way to do theater or to be in theater in Austin. Yep. So technically it predates everything, but probably out of everything, it's the thing that I do the least because I'm a little
doing lazy. So many other things.
There's that for sure. But I mean, the other thing is, you know, they always told you like, well, don't just focus on this one thing you want to do. You have to have other things. So kind of design fill in that, which I really enjoy. So, yeah.
Wonderful. And this show, Previews of Departing Attractions, is a series of your short pieces.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Tell us about them. Every single one of them.
Okay. Go through. It's about 10 pieces, and it's split roughly down the middle of things that have been staged here before through various kind of the dual parents of everything is basically Frontera Fest and Scriptworks. So, you know, Frontera Fest was it's this way for everybody in Austin, where it's kind of the thing that's like, hey, if you have an idea, you can come in and, you know, throw us $25 and you can do whatever you want. That was what they literally told. Like, I remember asking, like, can we do this on stage? They were like, as long as you're not putting a hole in the wall, you can do whatever you want.
And you paid your $25.
And you paid your $25. But I mean, that's fair. So that was sort of nobody said, hey, could you write and direct something? But you give yourself a chance. And that was the start of that. I've been a member of Scriptworks, which is a great organization in Austin that helps develop and incubate playwrights. So I've been a member of that. And I participate in a bunch of their stuff where some of these pieces came out of. So some have been presented at the Scriptworks thing. Some have been on Frontera. Some were in another collection of things that I did like 20 years ago called Blah, Blah, Blah. And then that also went to New York Fringe. So some of these pieces are part of that, part of Scriptworks. And then about half of them are new.
Brand new?
As of this year, all of them started. And, you know, I'm good with a deadline. This is why I... You know. So when you know, Laura had contacted me.
Our deadlines did shift a little.
Yeah, well, no, that was the thing. Like, Laura first contacted me like about this time in 2020 and was like, hey, we're looking for things to do. Can you throw something together? And like just at that time, I was like, I don't know if I can wake up. I don't. I would be into it, but I don't know that creativity is a thing anymore. So thankfully, she continued to harbor these desires. And so, yeah, when it became a like, okay, we're doing that, finally sat down and wrote the second half of the show.
Wonderful. Laura, was it always the plan to have Lowell's piece opening a transitory theater, or did that sort of finalize the position in your season when this opportunity came up?
Yeah, it was kind of the most amazing serendipity. We had another venue that we had set and we let go of to when this new space became available. I think originally when we were talking, we weren't even sure if this was going to be an online piece. And then we were going to bring it back and do it live. And the timing changed a couple times. And when this space came up and the themes that Lowell's writing kind of naturally explores, this we had talked about loss and transition, and he does it all with this fantastic humor, which is why I've always been a real big fan of Lowell's writing. Previews of Departing Attractions was the title he threw on it, and it just seemed perfect for this kind of transition period in a new space, to introduce people, to celebrate what we've had as a history in Austin theater and look toward the future.
Yeah, so let's
that
talk.
Universe working again.
Mm-hmm. There it goes. Let's talk about the themes, Lowell. The themes of transition, change, loss, all of those things sort of coming together. And I think Laura said it really well. I mean, one of the things that I've loved about you from the get-go is your
humor.
And I remember a B. Iden Payne award season one year where you just did not stop winning awards. And I think you came up, every time you came up, it was like you were elevating.
Because I kept accepting for people. Like, I was a designated acceptor. So, yeah, I was ridiculous by the end. I was like, okay, now I'm embarrassed.
But what I love about this, I mean, the themes that I'm hearing are things that are tough, poignant and really spot on in terms of what we're going through in today's world. But I just love the idea of you doing it with your thread of humor. So tell us about the themes.
I wish I had like a grand unifying principle about here's how I developed all these themes for these various things. And it was really Laura who kind of identified it when we were talking about doing it. And I sent her at that point, like, here's the pieces I would like to, you know, put into this as far as the pre-existing ones. And she was the one that was like, there's this, you know, element of loss in there, and that's a good thing. And I was like, oh, yeah, well, there it is. So all I can say is, like, I don't know. That's just something that kind of came naturally. I don't, you know, I could, you know, call in a therapist, and we could kind of figure out why I've always sort of been, well, this is temporary. This is going away. But that's always then. And then what sort of happened was, in starting to work towards this production, I didn't want to just like, well, that the script is 20 years old and I'm not going to look at it. We're just going to put it on stage. So I kind of wanted to look through everything. And sort of as I was rewriting some of these older pieces, you know, it's impossible for it not to be influenced by everything, especially these last 2 to 6 years. So that stuff started to flow in, not necessarily, you know, a couple times out front, but a lot of times just sort of in the background. But it was one of those things where it's like, oh, this is already in this piece, and if I just move it this way, it feels a little bit more. That was
awesome. So you wrote the pieces, obviously. You're also directing.
Yes.
Correct. Are you performing as well?
I asked him if he wanted to, and he smartly kind of walked away from that. Yeah. One.
I think that's a wise decision.
Yeah. That would
tell us about who is in the show, and any more about the team members that are putting this together.
Well, since we already mentioned her, Natalie George is on board to do lights, and I couldn't be more thrilled.
She is kind of a rock star. Yeah. Buffy Manners is on costumes.
Yeah,
and Lowell, another rock star, as mentioned, yeah, is doing audio and video design, and that's the thing. I don't know. Lowell went to film school, which I think a lot of people do know, and that's one of the hats that he wears so well. So there are some really fantastic and very funny video pieces integrated into this.
Yeah.
The cast, you're going to help me out here, includes Zach Carr, Kareem Badar, Marina
De Pedraza.
Julianne Villarreal, Sarah Chong Harmer, David DeBose, and Robert S. Fisher.
Got them.
Wonderful.
You got all
and
of them.
Sarah is someone that is relatively new to the scene, or new to me anyway. I've seen her in a couple of things lately, and just, she's amazing.
Yeah. She's on our staff. I adore her.
Oh, good. Yes. Well, there you go. Glad I said the right thing.
She is kind of an awesome person.
Yeah, but that's an amazing cast all around.
Our cast is kind of ridiculous. And then for me personally, this is... So like David DeBose, I met like in my second show in Austin, so didn't know anybody. And then we were in almost back-to-back productions of the Shakespeare play, whose name you're not supposed to say. And he played, you can say Macduff. He played Macduff in both of them. He just happened to be. They were completely independent. One was pretty good. One was the first show you do in Austin. So I met him on that. We've been friends. He's been friends with my wife through ScriptWorks and stuff, because he's kind of always in the showcases.
He is in every Out of Ink I've ever seen.
Yeah. and a lovely guy and a really good actor. So I got him. And then Robert Fisher, we go back almost as long, but there's a piece that'll be done called Bob's Birthday, and that we've done it like 3 or 4 times in the last 22 years, and he's always been that character.
Okay.
So now it'll change because he's, like he said the other day, or rehearsing it, he was like, wow, this was a lot different when I was in my early 20s and now. And I was like, yeah, it changes the flavor.
There's a way of doing
things. Because sadly, we're all still that age in our head, but the body hasn't caught up to go back to the...
Right. But then there's everybody else in between. So like Julianne Julianne I just met 2 months ago on ScriptWorks.
She was in our show Rainfall Special on Me and did a great job.
And Marina just recently met. And Zach I've been a fan of for a long time. So this is just a gift. And then there's Sarah, who I've known. Kareem I've known since Vortex a couple years ago. And that was one of those like, oh, I get a chance to... he has to sign a contract so that we hang out because he's busy. He's got regular stuff going on.
I was at the offstage and on the air when y'all performed that show.
That's
and
right.
I remember that was the first time I saw Kareem act. I was like, he's fantastic.
Yeah, he is great.
Like,
everybody
who is
great.
This
When does the show open, and where can folks go to get more information?
It opens August 5th, so just right around the corner.
It's true.
Yes, it
finish
is.
Getting this space set up. AustinPlayhouse.com is the best place for information. On
Great. That. Wonderful. And I would recommend folks to go to AustinPlayhouse.com and take a look at their blog. There's so much information. You can learn. I really loved reading Lowell's, but you can also learn about the new space and all sorts of other stuff that goes on in Austin Playhouse that has been around forever. And in 27,000 different theater venues here.
All of them, apparently.
Well, great. Well, thank you guys so much for coming on the show.
Thank
and
you.
I cannot wait to see it. Wonderful. So that was Laura Haddock and Lowell Bartholomew of Austin Playhouse production of Previews of Departing Attractions, playing August 5th through the 20th. More information can be found at austinplayhouse.com. And just because the themes of changes, and we love our waitress, let's listen to Everything Changes. We'll be right back.
Everything Changes.
We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa and Nicole.
The two of us.
What a lovely discussion that was.
The two of us. I know. I'm very excited.
Oh, you said the two of us. I thought you said achoo. you were sneezing.
No.
That's funny.
Could you imagine if I daintily sneezed achoo?
You could daintily sneeze. I would be up for that.
I don't daintily sneeze, sadly.
Anyway, that was a wonderful discussion with Laura Haddock and Lowell Bartholomew of Austin Playhouse. And Lowell is he just amazes me at everything he can do.
Yes, I first met him with the Austin Shakespeare. So it's like
the Austin Shakespeare.
Where hasn't Lowell been created?
True.
That's what's so spectacular. And it is. Boy, it really was like serendipity to have Lowell's show moving into this space for the first time.
Yeah, it really works out. So let's switch our gears to local stuff. And one of the things I wanted to talk about, I talked about the Mexican-American Cultural Center. I don't know if we talked about it on the show, but I know I've talked about it ad nauseum to my friends that it's shutting down for 2 years for renovations. And I was saying,
we're closed for renovations today.
Bump, bump. And
sorry, it made me think a Little Shop.
True.
Mexican-American closing for renovations.
Yeah, so I was like, what the hell? It just opened in the mid 2007 or something like that.
Yeah.
So I read the article in Sightlines, and it cleared.
Which article?
I'm about to talk about it.
No, there's a few. That's
I know. I'm about to talk about it. That's what I was doing. And this is the one that came out 2 days ago about the building, and it sort of lays out the entire history of the Mexican American Cultural Center. And it was always supposed to be done in stages.
Mm-hmm.
So this is one of the stages, and I was unaware of it. And it was designed by a Mexican American architect, Teodoro Gonzalez de Leon, and a Central Texas-based firm, Casa Bella Architects, that put it originally together. And it actually looks pretty cool. They're going to build a second story, but underground. So their second story is going to be under the first story. And it's going to be a whole nother event center and a beautiful outdoor space that goes onto the lake. Have you seen the drawings?
I have. So they've had a lot of bad people working there and a lot of scandal that has plagued it. And this should have been happening a long time ago. So I'm just hopeful it happens, and I think it's beautiful. But I got to hold my breath. It's like transportation. Is it going to happen?
Right.
So I'm hoping because I just love everything about them, and I've loved the plans and ideas and this movement from the beginning.
Right.
And it's strongly needed here.
Yeah. So this has been failed mostly because of failed bond packages and things like that. And they've been just working.
People that were running the place too that recently had to step down. It's like the perfect storm of everything happening. That how do you get it? But they've got a good group of people, it seems, to move things forward. So I'm jazz handing.
Yeah, me too. So currently, I think it's currently, it is at 36,000 square feet, and it's going to be growing from there. And it looks beautiful. You can see the design plans at Sightlines, or there will be a link at offstageonair.com to that article.
I love renderings.
I do too. And this looks really good. And it also, this article ends with a interview with the folks putting it together. or Miro, who's one of the new architects, is Miro Rivera, who is the current collaborative. It's collaboratively designed by Miro Rivera and Tatiana Bilbao Estudio. So this is with Miro.
It looks great.
It looks great. And yeah. It also has an interview, and
it talks about refreshing.
It talks about a little of the thought process. It does indeed. Mm-hmm. So I was a little upset because it had just opened and they're closing it down. And by the way, for this renovation, which I think they're estimating 2 years, which means four, we lose a theater in that spot. So the Mexican American Art Theater is the home of Teatro Vivo, as well as I forgot the name of the other theater, but...
You just said Teatro Vivas. Why is my mind blanking?
It's Proyecto Teatro.
Someone checked it back into the library. You were able to use it.
They are ostensibly losing their home for a couple of years. So they're going to be, like everybody else, looking for other stuff. But I'm really glad that they're doing it.
No, I'm glad. I'm glad, too.
Yep. Other things happening locally at Hyde Park
Theater. I jazz hand that happens quicker.
Okay. Done. We're jazz handing.
Yeah.
Hyde Park Theater has got Katie Bender's new play, Judith. It's a one-person show by the amazing Taylor Flanagan.
Love that, Taylor.
Plays August 4th through September 3rd, and hopefully we'll get them on. Next week, our dear friend, who I met over at the Institution Theater, Asaf Ronen, has written an original musical, and it's called...
I didn't know Asaf wrote musicals. I knew he wrote a lot of things, this is...
That he doesn't do.
Yeah, I know. He's another one.
So this is called Entanglement, a musical about intimate and quantum relationships. And I don't have written here the name of the composer he worked with, but they're going to be on the show next week. So check that out. Also going on currently is, Pet Dick, is happening. That's the radio play by Jarrett Productions, In the Heights. And what's the name of the other show?
Alice's Wonderland. Which is a new musical by J. Quentin Johnson.
Right.
And Alice Rihu.
Yep. They're playing now Much Ado About Nothing as a Cold Frame Collective we talked about last week. Of course, Newsies is happening out at the park. The Full Monty at TexArts. Sunflower is happening over at...
Don't Forget the Sunflower. Scottish Rite.
Scottish Rite. And did I miss anything?
No, not right this.
Well,
no,
we do have one thing that's opening next week, that we did not get on the show. It makes me kind of sad. Mean Girls is happening. I'm going to go see it.
I am Regina George.
So that's what's going on,
I can't wait to hear what you think about it. I think it was one done really well on stage.
I know, you loved
for movies,
it.
So I can't wait to hear your thoughts. I've been very excited for a long time to hear your thoughts.
Okay, folks, we're going to take a little break. We're going to come right back. This is from Mean Girls.
I can do this, always could. Playing dumb will feel so damn good.
All right, we'll just come on and let that play underneath because that's what we like to do as we finish up today. So coming up next is John Hoffner with the Austin Common Radio Hour. He's trying his hardest to peel away the microphone from Nicole, but she's not going to let him on it. Hey, John, tell us what you're going to have on the show today.
Dancing over here with Nicole. We're in our series on women in solar power. This is part two, series on solar and women. And it's Laura Dahl, who used to work at Austin Energy. So it's going to be
Laura Dahl. She's a real doll.
Real doll. That's her name, yeah.
Okay.
Great show.
Thank you.
And I did go to see Sound of Music.
Yay. What'd you think of it?
I thought it was great. It was very interesting the way it's set up. I don't know if you've been to it.
But I haven't been to it, but I know about the setup, and certainly Nicole knows all sorts about it.
Yeah, it was a little bit distracting having tables up on the stage where people were sitting, but otherwise it was fantastic.
Did they throw food?
Yeah, right.
When the Hitler Youth come on, I'm going to throw my baked potato at them.
Yeah, that would be fun. But no, I think they were fairly civil. But they did get up and dance, the crowd.
Cool. Nicole, Sound of Music is closing soon, is it not?
It just did close, and they're in rehearsals in 2 weeks. The Inheritance,
Part One.
The regional premiere.
They just announced the cast. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's going to be amazing.
Which I'm actually you know, straight plays aren't always my jam, and I'm excited about this
one. I'm excited about the Hand.
Yeah, I am. A lot. A lot!
All right. Well, you've just done it. I wanted to just once again, because I've not been very good about doing it, is to thank Dean Johansson at The Human Condition for allowing us to use Step On Up as our theme song. So y'all can go on and find him at his website, if I knew what it was. I'm going to just guess it's thehumancondition.com.
Probably.
Yep. Again, stand by for Austin Common Radio Hour with John Hoffner. You just heard him talk. Well, Women in Solar panel, and we're going to talk to Ms. Dahl. And Nicole and I will be back next week when we look at what's happening off stage and on the air. Bye.
Ciao. Persist, then our lives.